Okay, well, let me just say for those who haven't come to these crazy talks before, welcome. This is a totally public, open event. You don't have to give your name, you don't have to introduce yourself, where you stand, what you know, all that. It's just basically a place for people to have a chat and, you know, throw in your two cents once the presentation is over, and don't forget to leave a bit of room for others, and just, you know, it's pretty casual here. We don't attack each other with machetes or anything like that. But what else can I tell you? Oh, yeah. Crazy Talks is a totally person-based event. It's not funded by universities or by mental health agencies of any kind, and that's why I love it so. Certainly, it's something that can be done by anybody. So every month, first Tuesday of the month, we have a chat about whatever it is that's on the roster. So this month we are extremely happy. Laura Delano has been doing some great stuff recently. I want to hear your version of it, because to me it's like helping people escape psych drugs, psych diagnoses, that sort of thing, right? But you might prefer to talk about it differently. This kind of work hasn't really been done before, so, you know, I'm glad you're with us and you're going to talk to us about whatever. You know, I know that that's not all you do. There's a bunch of other things you do as well, so you might want to, you know, talk about some of that too.
Sounds good. Is that Robert back there?
Hi, Laura.
Hi. I'll just quickly, say, I guess, a little bit more about what I'm up to these days, and then I was thinking I'd talk for a little bit about, like, my own experience coming off psych drugs, and then talk a bit about, like, what I've learned through that experience and kind of how I try to support people today who are coming off. And just kind of sharing some of like the lessons I've learned along the way about withdrawal. And then I was thinking we could like open it up and have a dialogue around withdrawal itself, or around kind of like organizing in communities around withdrawal support, because that's definitely something I'm really energized about and like trying to do in my community, and so be cool to like brainstorm together like maybe what's going on in your community. But I consider myself first and foremost like an activist. I also am a writer and an organizer, I guess. And I've been doing this work that I think of as psychiatric liberation work since I escaped the system just around 6 years ago. And I've been like really, it's been really meaningful for me to kind of take my own experiences in the mental health industry and use them to try to make change happen however I'm able to. Maybe I'll launch a little bit into my journey out of the system, how it happened. I always like to start by saying like it's really important for me to name the privilege that I carry and what a role that's played in both getting me into the system, but also getting me out. My escape happened pretty quickly in 2010. And basically, so I've been in the system for 14 years. I was first psychiatrized when I was a 13, 14-year-old kid. And I really fought back at the beginning, and I rejected the labels, and I didn't like taking the drugs, and I hit the drugs. And but at age 18, I was in a lot of pain, and so I totally kind of fully surrendered myself to the system at that point and became like a very good patient, very compliant patient, always doing what the doctor said because I was just in so much pain and I wanted that pain to go away. And so I had been like a full indoctrinate of the medical model, full believer, like it was my identity, it was my life, it was like the only thing I had pride in was like being a good patient. So I was just like fully in it. And in 2010, I had like a series of small, what seemed at the time small, but I see now were very significant events that kind of forced me to face the reality of what my life had become, and they involved like force and coercion, really, and I'll kind of skim over them, but one involved being told I had the choice to go inpatient involuntarily or voluntarily. So I chose voluntary, even though I didn't want to go in that day. Another involved calling the police on me, and another involved being forced to take medication, drugs, for keeping me from drinking alcohol. And so these three things have happened that were getting me to start, they were forcing me to really face, like, holy shit, these people own me. Like, they own my body, they own my right to fresh air, they own, you know, they're telling me, like, what I need to make it in the world. Like, wait a minute, like, something's wrong with this. So I started to think about that, but I wasn't yet questioning, like, am I, maybe I'm not mentally ill, maybe I don't have a chemical imbalance, but I was just, like, disturbed. And then I found, later that year in May of 2010, I found Robert Whitaker's Anatomy of an Epidemic in a bookstore. And I didn't know what it was about, but the cover was very compelling for me. It had a picture of all these different drug names on a phrenology head. So I bought it, and I read it somehow on five drugs. I was on lithium, Lamictal, Abilify, Effexor, and Ativan. I had a PR and a Seroquel. I somehow read the book, and it was my aha moment. It was like my whole previous 14 years of my life just came, like, flooding back as I realized, oh my God, like, what if it hasn't been, like, my brain that's been, like, fucking me up over all these years? What if it's been the, like, treatment itself? And it just, that was really all I needed to kind of get my start. Like, I suddenly had this alternative way forward. Like, I bought into the narrative of, like, you have a lifelong brain disease and you're going to need us for the rest of your life. I bought into that so fully. And now here suddenly was this different way. And so just the very possibility of that got me really curious. I see now it was kind of curiosity to explore that. Like, what if this story I've been believing isn't true and there is another story out there for me? So that was kind of what was driving me to make the decision to really come off. And I guess the other decision too that I was, or the other question that I was really grappling with was, like, who am I? Like, who am I on these drugs? Who would I be off of them? Like, how have these drugs shaped my personality, my body, my mind, my cognition? Like, I was just, it was just eating away at me that I didn't know who I was beyond these drugs. So it was kind of those were the two, what I call beacons that I was going towards. Like, I wanted to find out what this other way could be, and I wanted to find out who I could be off of these drugs. And I proceeded to come off of them after basically, like, not giving up getting my doctor to agree. And again, like, I was lucky. I didn't have forced drugging. Like, I wasn't under guardianship. I wasn't being forcibly drugged at that time. So I was able to do this, and a lot of people aren't, and that's maybe something we could explore together in our conversation after. But I basically convinced the doctor to let me come off of these drugs. It's a long story as to why he agreed. And he proceeded to bring me off of five drugs in 5 months, which is, like, basically cold turkey, really fast. I had no idea what I was doing. I don't think he had any idea what he was doing. And I entered into what would be the most difficult couple of years of my life. And yeah, like, basically the first year to year and a half of withdrawal of coming off the drugs and being off of them, like, every day was a battle to survive. Like, showering, like, I often say, like, taking a shower more than once a week was a really, really, really big deal for me. Interacting, like, having a conversation with someone was a really big deal for me. My body was, like, so messed up. I had, like, I was having spontaneous vomiting. I was having migraines. I had a lot of pain. My mind was, like, just totally, I felt, like, completely possessed by these, like, really intense, powerful disturbing thoughts that I have no control over. Like, it was hell. It was really hard, but I was so committed to finding out who I could be off of these drugs and like what my life could look like that I just kept going. And I'd say that about a year and a half off, things started to plateau at like really, really shitty. Like, it was still really hard, but it wasn't getting progressively worse anymore. And in years, like 2 to 3, just slowly, slowly things started to like dissipate slightly. You know, like I realized, wow, I just read a whole paragraph and I actually read it. Like little things like that, where previously, like my ability to absorb information, to remember anything, to like, you know, have a good night's sleep, all of these things were so thrown off that just slowly they started to kind of slip back into place in bits and pieces. And I would say at 3.5 years off, I just started to have these profound like awakenings and shifts. I could just feel like my whole being kind of starting to integrate back into itself. Like I had been just a complete prisoner to sugar. Like, I just binge ate for like 2.5 years straight, where my mind, like my hunger, my satiation, everything was so out of whack that and food had become kind of like a panacea for me, for my pain. And just at 3.5 years, like I could feel suddenly my metabolism was starting to figure itself out. Suddenly my mind was starting to get clear, and I actually would, when I spoke, the words that came out of my mouth were actually the things that I've been like thinking about in my head, and I would feel this connection to what I was speaking, and I was feeling these intense kind of meaningful emotional responses to people and to nature. And just 3 to 3.5 years in, I would say, was like a really big turning point for me. And basically from then till now, and this month marks 6 years that I've been off, it's been this like amazing journey of like awakening and discovery and rediscovery. And it's been really fucking hard. Like, I still have tremendous, I have a lot of pain and darkness in my life, and I actually think that I always will, and I think it's an important part of who I am. So it's been really dark at points, and I still definitely have healing to do. Like, my body, I can tell in this very like cellular way, my body is still healing from the pharmaceutical trauma of these drugs. Like, my gut is still totally kind of not where I think it probably should be. I like still have kind of weird toxic things going on in my body. Right. I'm so committed to this process of discovering myself that these past few years, I've just been in this kind of surrender mode where I'm just trusting in the process of my body, in the process of my humanity. And so even the dark times have been like so meaningful and valuable for me. And I'd say like that's one of the things that I've come to realize is what coming off of these drugs is all about. Like, it's not even getting off of them itself that's what the journey is about. It's about what happens after that. About like coming back into your body, into your undrugged body, and like learning what it feels like and what its potential is and what its capacity is, coming back into your mind and your creativity and your cognitive abilities and your communicative abilities, be they writing, speaking, art, like body language, whatever, coming back into like my personality and my sense of humor and like the things that interest me and my values and my politics. Like, getting off the drugs is really an opportunity to like take your life back and to reclaim your identity and every facet of yourself. And like, basically, it's like a really hard process to do that. And I think it's one that I'll be doing for the rest of my life, but it's shown me so much about like my relationship to pain and discomfort and darkness, and I've learned so much about like all of the factors that I think were at play that led me into the system in the first place, like, you know, the values that are we're indoctrinated into as a society around like what it means to be normal and, you know, what it means to be like a functioning member of like our neoliberal, like, you know, of this like individualistic, like neoliberal, like, society that we're in, and the stories we're taught as young people, as women, about like how to be a worthy person, like all of that was playing in the stories my parents were taught. You know, they were the ones who brought me to the mental health system. I've had the opportunity to really go back to unpack like what was going on for me that led me into the system, and I do think like a huge part of it was that I had been taught to be really afraid of pain, of especially of my emotional pain and of my mind and of my darkness. And so coming off drugs and taking my life back has largely been about transforming my relationship to all of that, to my darkness, and like learning how to not be afraid of it anymore and how to be with it. And of course, like that to me is what liberation is all about. It's not like the absence of pain or struggle. It's like being able to be with it without being afraid of it and without thinking you need to turn it over to like powerful corporations and industries and like so-called professionals and so-called treatments. So a lot of the work I do today, like for me, it really revolves around this kind of conversation. Like, how do we as human beings come together in true community in our neighborhoods, like in our towns and our cities, and like learn how to reclaim our lives together and reclaim our pain together and reclaim what it means to care, to like care for oneself and to care for another, because that concept has been totally co-opted by these various like helping industries. And so, yeah, I think there's a very technical aspect to coming off that's really important, and I'd be happy to like, maybe I'll take a couple of minutes to talk about that before I stop. But yeah, we need to, you know, really create spaces and resources so that people can educate themselves around how to safely come off, like literally how to do it. Like, what rate do I come off at? What order of drugs do I come off at? Like, how do I do it? You know, we need spaces for that and for people to get support around that. And I think we also really need to be focusing on making these kind of spaces for exploration together of what it means to be human, and that they go hand in hand, and that if we really want to build a society that's liberated from psychiatry and like the very notion of not just mental illness, so-called, but mental health too, which I think is just as problematic a concept as so-called mental illness, you know, if we're really going to build a future beyond all of that, it means like taking back our power from all the authorities that we've turned it over to and also that have stolen it from us. And yeah, so maybe, I'm looking at the time, I think I've only been talking for about 15 to 20 minutes. Has it been that short?
Yeah, we've still got another 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll talk a little bit about like coming off, just generally, kind of like some of the lessons I've learned about it, some of the like tips and ideas that I share with people who reach out to me about coming off. Because I think it's a really like, it's pretty terrifying to think about how few spaces there are to turn to get help with this. Like, when you think about how many people out there are on these drugs, and how little information exists around safely coming off of them, I mean, it's mind-boggling, and it's like one of the greatest, I think, travesties of our time. And like, I've definitely come to believe that it's those of us who've done it ourselves who are the true like experts on this. We're the ones who hold the body of evidence, because there is no like formal research being done on this, really. you know, what research does exist is largely like ripping people off of these drugs in a couple of weeks and they or a couple of months, and they call that withdrawal. Like, no one's really looking at like how to actually do it in such a way that a person can continue living their lives and without like completely falling into disarray in the coming off process. So yeah, like I really believe it's those of us who've done it ourselves who are the true experts in this. And I think it's a topic that's really, if any of you here are like thinking about coming off or have family members or friends who are thinking about coming off, it's a really serious topic that has a lot of stakes and risks, and it's something to really invest a lot of time up front into learning about and researching so that you can empower yourself with information about both about the drugs that you're on to like really understand as much as anyone's able to at this stage, like how they've impacted your body, like how they've altered, you know, the neurotransmitter, the whole processes of like neurotransmitter function in your central nervous system, how they've altered your gut, how they've impacted like your mitochondria, like it really goes right down to like the cellular level that we're impacted by these drugs. And once you have a solid understanding of that, it then becomes like really logical why it's so important to come off slowly. And that being said, some people come off fast and are totally okay. Like, I came off 5 drugs in 5 months and here I am. It was hell, but I'm here. I have friends who stopped cold turkey. They were like messed up for a couple weeks and then we're good to go. So it's not that, you know, every single person needs to come off slowly or else, but the problem is it's so risky and there's so many unknowns and there's no way to know if you're going to be one of those lucky few or not. And I think so I'll often talk through with people, you know, like how do you prepare yourself to come off, like informing yourself in the way I just described, and then also thinking through the circumstances of your life to see if the time is right to do it. Like, do you have a lot of life stressors that are totally like overwhelming you? Are there big life changes happening? Is your physical health kind of compromised right now? Are you totally isolated and alienated from any kind of support? Of course, like, are you under forced drugging? Like, that's a serious issue. Do you have access to nutritious food and shelter? Like, there's so many factors to think through, so I'll often like explore that with someone. And I do think it's important to take time to explore like what's your relationship to pain like, because this might be a really difficult process for you, and the more you can be ready to be with pain and like find ways of doing that, the better. So these, I'll explore these kinds of things with people, and then when the person's ready to taper off, like we'll talk through the rate that they're going to come off at. And what we're finding in the kind of like underground withdrawal community, which is mostly happening online right now, what we're finding is, and this is based on like thousands and thousands of anecdotal reports, for some reason, like most people find the threshold of like making a cut of between 5% and 10% of the current dose of your drug per month is typically the window that allows people to basically keep functioning in their lives, holding down jobs, like, you know, taking care of family, whatever the responsibilities are. Like, for some reason, once you're past 10% per month cut, like that seems to really throw a lot of people into disruption. So I'll talk that through with the person, and of course, like, it's up to the person to decide for him, her, themselves, like how they want to come off. But presuming they do decide to do it in this particular manner, then it means thinking through how the hell am I going to do that, because most of these drugs come in tablets or capsules. Some people are on injections. some of the capsules or tablets are extended release, which you can't cut. And of course, you can't, like, how do you even get 5% of a tablet? So then the conversation becomes about, like, A, talking with your doctor about compounding your drug for you in a liquid or in, like, a really small dose, which typically means costing money because a lot of insurance, I don't know what it's like in Canada with, like, health insurance stuff, but here it's really hard to get compounded drugs covered if it's not, like, a medical necessity. And, of course, like, withdrawal is not considered a medical necessity in this context. So yeah, exploring, like, how do I get my drug into the form I need it to be is then the conversation that we'll have. And what a lot of people are doing, like, I didn't do this because I didn't know any of this. But now that I've been doing this work for a bunch of years, like, I've learned a lot about it. A lot of people are making their own liquid at home. They're dissolving their tablet or their capsule, if it's a non-beaded capsule. Because if it's a beaded capsule, I think Cymbalta beaded capsule. If it's a beaded capsule, you can't dissolve that. You actually have to count the beads in order to take that at a slow rate. So yeah, just, I won't spend too much time in all this technical stuff, but basically helping a person get set up so that they can actually get the drug in the form that they need it to be in to do this slow, safe taper, which will involve, like, pulling out with a syringe, not a needle syringe, but, you know, like a water syringe, potentially using a gram scale to weigh. It's, like, very technical. It's amazing. People basically have to become, like, chemists to do this stuff. And so then I think I want to wrap up because I'm really eager to connect with all of you, but I think what I'll end with is, you know, really the more you can have kind of an array of options to turn to if you find yourself facing difficulties. And then the more you can have those in place in advance, the better. So, like, say you stop sleeping or you stop getting enough sleep. Like, for a lot of people, that's, like, that's really scary shit because sometimes that's what can send a person into what gets called psychosis, which means you might get locked up, which means you'll then be put on a bunch more drugs, and then you're, like, 10 steps further back than before. So having plans in place around, like, what do I do if I stop sleeping? What are some things that can help me sleep? Like, you know, whether it's a guided body scan or, like, a warm bath or, like, an acupressure mattress or, you know, whatever it might be. Having those kinds of things in place in advance and having some, like, coping skills. Of, like, oh, that sounds so, like, therapist-y to say that phrase. Like, it's one of those phrases that's, like, ruined for me. But having things you can turn to when shit's hitting the fan. Like, for me, when my mind was on fire in withdrawal, I would needlepoint, or I would do a jigsaw puzzle, or I would do a crossword puzzle, which I could barely even do in the beginning because my mind was so messed up. But using my hands in, like, kind of repetitive fashion with the needlepointing was really helpful for me when I needed to kind of check out for my mind. And, like, doing a jigsaw puzzle or a crossword puzzle or Sudoku, like, that was a helpful distraction for me. So kind of preparing yourself in advance with these kinds of things, you know, maybe walking. Even walking for 3 hours is, like, the only thing that helps you not kill yourself in a, like, when you're in the throes of crisis. You know, like, being prepared in advance with these things can be really important, and being prepared with a support team in place. People who know exactly what's going on for you, who are there for you, who get it, who aren't going to fucking call crisis or your doctor and get you locked up. Having people you can turn to who are safe is really important. And then I'd say that, like, the number one most important thing is, like, listening to your body and listening to yourself along the way. And for many of us, that's, like, what we have to relearn, because that's what the system takes from us. It strips away our right to trust in our instincts and our intuition. And in our bodies and what our bodies communicate to us and what our instincts communicate to us. So that's, like, totally, it's not just important for the actual tapering process. so you know when you need to slow down your taper or hold it for a while because your body's telling you like, ah, too fast. But it's also just crucial to the whole process of like psychiatric liberation, really, you know, taking your intuition back from them, because that's what they take from us. And so that's like hands down to me the most important part of the tapering process, is like listening to yourself along the way, or learning how to listen to yourself. So maybe I'll leave it at that, and then I don't know how you guys want to like talk in the next however long we have, but yeah, like I'm totally eager to hear from you guys, to like brainstorm about withdrawal stuff in the community. Oh, I didn't even talk about that. Shit. Well, maybe dialogue, talk a bit more about like what's happening, like in my community, for example, around it. But yeah, I could ramble on forever about stuff, so I'm going to stop myself. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.